We're back, Javier. We are back. 2 weeks off. We had 2 weeks off, although I will say we weren't really off. We weren't really off.
Oh, my God.
I got to see you.
No time off.
Yeah, if you were lucky, you got to see the reunion between Javier and Elliot. We're currently in North Carolina and Argentina, so I can't hug this man whenever I want, but NJ Biz gave me a reason to. That being said, I'm going to let Javi rap for like a minute here. You're going to get like a minute because we're not going to do our standard news because we have an incredible show for you today. We're going to start off with Aaron Miles, CIO of Verano Holdings. Then we're going to go right into Socrates Rosenfeld, CEO and co-founder of Jane Technologies. And we're going to wrap it all up with Grant Schuster, CEO of Accelerate Manufacturing. It's a packed house today. I'm pumped. This is going to be incredibly insightful and informational for us, let alone anybody listening. But if you have questions, drop them into the chat. Javier and team and us will communicate them as long as they are appropriate. So fair shake there. Last but not least, we released our first of four videos of interviews we did at MJ Biz today. Just check out any of, I think, BZ Cannabis socials. You can also check out Benzinga YouTube for these interviews we did on site at MJ Biz. The first was Dutchy Investor Awareness and Polaris Equity Group from Vegas 2 weeks ago. So Javi, a lot of content, man. Tons of videos to watch. If you guys are interested, dive in. But Javi, how are you, man?
Doing great. Very, very excited with these three interviews. Plus the bonus round. I think, you know, not a bunch of news, just a bunch of earnings reports today. You know, I like celebrity news. I'm a sucker for celebrities. And I spoke to Ivan Moody, who is the lead singer of Five Finger Death Punch, who launched a new or is launching a new line called Greenings by Moody's Medicinals. It's his own cannabis brand. This guy has a very interesting story of battling addiction, recovering from alcoholism, and of course, leveraging cannabis to replace a bunch of the different medications that he was taking after what he said was losing, you know, hours, days, weeks, even months of time with his family, with his colleagues, with his friends, right? And cannabis, many say, is a gateway drug, but us who know cannabis well can argue it's an exit drug. Very interesting news. All the earnings, benzinga.com/cannabis/earnings. I'm not going to go through all of them or over all of them because honestly, it's a bunch of them. A very interesting article on benzinga.com/cannabis. 80 top Colorado cannabis CEOs reveal cannabis industry insights. This is an article that was written by Patrick Rhea of Poseidon because we do not only get our own writers, but also amazing, amazing thought leaders in the cannabis industry to provide exclusive content on Benzinga. So again, benzinga.com/cannabis. Don't forget to bookmark benzinga.com/cannabis. Check it out every day. We publish more than 30 articles a day. All you need to know about cannabis in one place.
Boom. Mic drop. You went fast. That was great, man. That being said, we're not going to do a full intro today. We're 5 minutes in already. I want the time to be focused on our guests this afternoon. So Javier, what do you say we get started, man?
Let's do it.
Aaron Miles, CIO, Chief Investment Officer of Verano Holdings Corp. That is VRNOF on the OTC. Aaron Thomas, let's bring him over. Aaron, welcome back, my friend. This is our time number two, but it has been a while, man. How have you been?
I've been good. This is two, and obviously appreciate being able to jump on again. But things have been good, busy, and a little bit more quiet, which is good in our world. So, you know, what we want is repetition and just, you know, smooth operations. So, I'm sure, and I know we're going to get into more detail, it was a very quiet quarter for us, which is what we wanted. So,
you want that even more so in this turbulent year, right? I mean, this year has been very rude, would be a word of my choice to cannabis companies. But
you know, I was going to say, I think what people lose sight of is that, you know, they think we're a very established industry, which we're not. So we're building every day, we're building, and there's so much uncertainty. Take away COVID, recessionary, supply chain disruptions, hurricanes in Florida. I mean, these are all massive events that we've had to face, and take all that away, it's still a hard business to operate. So I think we've done a really, really nice job of navigating these waters here.
Indeed. But you see, you know, you it's been quite chill, but at the same time, you recently reported revenue and you still had revenue growth of 10% in Q3. Of course, I'm sure Jersey helped a lot, but like, can you talk a little bit about the recent results? What was good? What was bad? What can be improved?
Yeah, I would say, you know, you are right. 10% year over year, 2% sequentially. And it was kind of, you know, I know only a few companies were really able to report, you know, sequential growth in the quarter. For us, Jersey is the obvious, right? Like, you know, we were very strong in Jersey. You know, wholesale revenue was up 3 times versus the prior year, 5 times retail up versus the prior year. So Jersey was always going to be a positive in Q3. I think what we were more proud of is the way that we were able to stabilize some of the other markets, right? Because there are pricing pressure in Florida and Pennsylvania. And so to be able to generate growth in a very compressed and you know, stressful environment, I think was a testament to the way that we're really building this company. And I think that, you know, we faced the same challenges that a lot of other companies faced, but we rose to the challenge in how we're positioning the business. You know, we were knocked when we first went public for, you know, not having this broad portfolio of products, but we never wanted to get too far ahead. And so when you look at, you know, kind of the, you know, branding that I have in the background, in the quarter, we were really able to accelerate, you know, our value in our mid-tier brands, which we never had. We were always a premium-focused company that always drove very high margins, but in a new pricing pressured environment, we're now focusing more on the value in the mid-tier brand. So, you know, Q3 wasn't just about stabilizing revenue and really trying to drive that sequential growth. It was also the way that we transformed the business in light of opportunities that we see ahead of us.
Now, without, that was an awesome answer. Without naming names, another tier one MSO, you know, we'll make some headlines every now and then with discussing perhaps future looking statements. But I love your insights on what you were just talking about, products. And you don't want to get too far ahead and what you're focusing on, what the future will be. You don't have to give me a broad landscape changing answer here, but I am curious, is there a part of cannabis or a sector of cannabis that you're putting more attention into product-wise for your consumers and what you're seeing your consumers buy?
Yeah, I would think it's twofold, right? I think you're seeing the levels of product quality that we have out into the market adapt and really be expanded, right? So again, you're looking at an industry where, and we joke about it, but in reality, when cannabis was first legal in Illinois, we could have put it in a shoebox and sold it, right? So, but we were able to sell premium, high quality flower. And so what you're seeing us do is really focus in on that value in that mid-tier. And the benefits behind this is not only are you offering a broad selection to the consumer base, especially when wallets are getting, you know, pinched and prices are, you know, really rising in a lot of different areas, you're offering a higher selection, but it also, from a wholesaling perspective in a market like Pennsylvania, for instance, we don't have to buy that value in that mid-tier. We can actually roll that through our own dispensary. So I think from a tiered perspective, you now see us have that full breadth. And this isn't a reaction to where the, you know, the industry and the economy is at. This is part of the plan. We just accelerated the rollouts of these in light of what's going on from an industry perspective. And then I would say you're going to look at us adapting, pun intended, because we are now starting to add some adaptogens to some of our, you know, product line. You know, the Bits is a perfect example. You know, the example of this, where, you know, reishi mushrooms and sativa, and you're starting to see us broaden our actual product portfolio. And really, we're just tapping into how that can look. And then I would say third, is really looking at those third party brands. And so Ric Flair, you know, we have a, you know, Tyson 2.0 partnership. And we're very selective on what we're going to roll into our product portfolio. It has to fit the Verano, you know, standard and the Verano kind of that feel and that look and that feel in that product definitely does.
Yeah, and you kind of read my mind there. I wanted to ask you about that. About 2-3 weeks ago, I was on the phone with an investor friend, and I get a random call from someone, a number I don't recognize, and they call again, and I'm like, okay, this must be important. Hold up for a second. Pick up, Javier, it's Mike. And I'm like, okay, what's up? Like, I instantly recognize the voice. It's pretty easy to spot. And he's telling me about this new line that he would be launching with Evander Holyfield, and he would be working with Verano, right? So my question to you is, what is the rationale behind a licensing deal, you know, instead of doing your own brand or your own celebrity brand, or like finding your own celebrity, like Why did you go the licensing route with Tyson 2.0 and Ric Flair, Flair Drip, or I think that's the name.
Flair. Yeah, yeah. I would say this, you know, a lot of, you know, M&A, third-party brands, you know, these start from prior relationships. And so, you know, one of our co-founders had a relationship with the group. You know, we were kind of kicking the tires on both sides because it has to be a two-way street. It has to make sense for what they're trying to accomplish as well. And when you think about these third-party brands, is they're going to want to partner with the vehicle that's going to really be able to give them broad exposure from on a national perspective. And when we have that premium reputation and the high operational reputation that, you know, we've been able to establish throughout the years, it was very intriguing for them. And then for us, it's name recognition and the way that they're going to roll out these products and the interest that the consumer in that. It wasn't going to save our portfolio. We would be fine if we didn't have a third party, you know, agreement in place, but this was going to be additive to our portfolio. So it really was a two-way street. It was the, you know, a really selective relationship for us. And you know, we're always going to continue to evaluate these opportunities, but it really started with a prior relationship that we had, and it just made overall sense for the business.
I'd like to...
I don't know if you watched that video between Evander Holyfield and Mike Tyson, but that was probably one of the best marketing videos I've seen.
It was hilarious. All of it was hilarious. I got to be honest. I loved it.
So just a really quick recap before we kind of get more looking into 2023. How do you feel the overall year was for cannabis at large this year? You know, there's a lot of negative sentiment, but there's also a lot of hope. I'd love to understand from somebody who's in the midst of it, one of the leaders in this industry, how do you look back on 2022?
So, you know, I think 22, you know, obviously people are going to focus in on the challenges, but, you know, when you look at the opportunity ahead, you know, I think there was a lot of positives in the space. I mean, Jersey alone turning on was a massive boost for the industry. You know, obviously that was an organic win for us and one that we were able to really take advantage of, but you're starting to see the tide shift a little bit, right? You're starting to see, you know, Biden talk about rescheduling and the research bill potentially being signed and safe, starting to pick up some steam. It's not just a concept and a theory. You're starting to see some actual movement behind some of these things. So I think 22 is going to be looked at as the year where you actually saw the sentiment shift in the industry. You know, I think we're all, you know, somewhat in survival mode right now, just given a lot of the pressures that we faced. But I think you'll see the cream rise to the top. I think you'll see the operators that have positioned themselves well. We definitely feel like we're one of those, start to take advantage of these opportunities that are going to, you know, start to present themselves. So 22 overall had its challenges, but I think, you know, it pressure tested the market. And, you know, you can see the companies that responded well to that. And so when you look at like what we're doing is we're being very selective on CapEx, right? Like we're making a selective measure to pull back on CapEx because we're extremely proud of what we've built from a footprint perspective. But we're going to wait to see how some of these markets develop before we really start to invest more dollars in building our capacity. So I think 22 will go down as the year when you actually saw the sentiment shift and cannabis start to be more accepted on a federal perspective. Because in reality, we don't need federal legislation. It's going to help, but that I think it's going to be the boost in the industry, you know, once and if that gets passed. So
I hear hope in your voice, Aaron. I hear it, man.
It's the most positive I've been in a while, right? Especially, you know, you see the midterms, right? And you see like, you know, Biden come out, you know, a month before and talk about rescheduling. And you're just like, you hope that moment continues after the midterms. And it did, right? And mm-hmm. The big thing I think that is actually a positive for the space is that it wasn't a red wave, right? I think you are even looking at like the House shifted red, you know, the Senate stayed blue, but they're so close that you could almost consider this to be a very bipartisan Congress now. And so with that said, you're starting to get a lot more collaboration on both sides of the aisle in focusing on what SAFE's going to potentially look like. And so, you know, I've heard this for 4 years now. We all know what SAFE could potentially mean for this industry, but we've never been more bullish on this space. And I think that is a sentiment that my peers would also echo.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Javi, I got one more. Do you have anything first?
Oh.
Okay.
No, mine is technical, so I'll leave it for last.
Okay, we'll leave that for last. I just want to...
That's a long question. I don't want to answer a technical question.
You shouldn't have said it, Javi. So, Aaron, I mean, I would say the one, you know, news item that all caught our eyes, because as you say, people focus on the negative. But I think when you look at what could come from you all stepping away from that major acquisition that took a lot? You know, maybe talk about some of what we can look ahead, even though you just said you're keeping your CapEx low. So I'd like to understand a little bit about where stepping away from Goodness Growth takes you into 2023 with M&A.
Yeah. So M&A, you know, the thing is, we've all been very quiet on that front, but the relationships are still being built. We know what we want to do from a footprint perspective. I mean, we've always been a limited license focused, you know, vertically integrated focused company. And you can see this starting to really resonate. I mean, again, I keep harping on New Jersey, but like having an organic win there and being able to really position ourselves ahead of adult use is the MO. I mean, when you look at five states that are applying, you know, for transition over to adult use and the position that we have in those states, from, you know, Maryland, it's a legacy state for us. We're maxed out. Connecticut, I mean, our cultivation facility in Connecticut is an old McKesson warehouse, 217,000 square feet. I mean, you can put all of our competitors' footprints in that capacity and still have room left over. So, you know, we're positioning ourselves ahead of adult use. And then you look at Florida, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. These are all markets where we have a very strong presence. So, you know, going forward, you're going to look at us continue to evaluate opportunities to build in a limited license structure, grab medical share, you know, from a medical program, and then position ourselves ahead of adult use. And then you have to always do your due diligence. And that's, you know, the bigger states that have been, you know, legacy. So you look at Colorado, like you look at other states that we haven't historically looked at, but you have to build those relationships to see what the opportunities are. And then international is starting to pick up some steam. You know, while we're far off, I would say, you know, we would be remiss to not actually start doing the homework on those to understand what Germany is going to look like, or the UK and Spain and Portugal. And you know, there's big movements that are being made internationally that we're going to, you know, continue to focus in on. But I think that's a little bit of a ways away. And then, you know, when you highlighted the Goodness Growth acquisition, I mean, you know, obviously we're really sensitive to what we can say, you know, just given some of the litigation around that. But we took time to evaluate New York. It was a state that we had opportunities, you know, very early on in 2017 and 2018 to execute on. But what we do as a company is we never get too far ahead. So when you look at the brands that I now have in my background, these evolved over time because of the need that we saw. We didn't want to guess at what that demand would be. Once we started to see that demand accelerate, that's why you saw that value in that mid-tier. We do the same thing from an M&A perspective. As you start to see opportunities accelerate that can be accretive for the business, then you'll start to see our interest pick up. But, you know, really with where equity is trading at right now, we have to be very careful in diluting the stock. But we're still having conversations in multiple states. And I would say, you know, expanding first, we could be extremely happy with the footprint that we have right now. But you will continue to see us try to evaluate opportunities to add to the portfolio.
I will close it up in a positive note. Our good friends at Viridian Capital Advisors put out a report recently looking at what makes an investment attractive in the cannabis space. Is it low multiples or better credit quality, right? And they looked at 14 top MSOs where there's analyst estimates available for 2023 EBITDA. And according to their analysis, the two most attractive investments were Trulieve and Verano. They said you have reasonable valuation multiples and relatively high credit ranks. One is a little bit of a euphemism in a way, because, you know, a reasonable valuation multiple, in other words, translates to the stock is a little bit cheap. What is driving that valuation and what could improve it? And on the other hand, what are you doing to keep a good credit rating versus your peers?
Wow, it's not as technical as I thought, so I'll answer this.
No, I toned it down a bunch.
I would say first and foremost, we suffered from going public in February of last year, right? We were a new entrant into the market, and, you know, right off the bat, we had an unlock schedule that we had to face, and, you know, there was a lot of shorting that was happening around that. We ended up pulling it forward and completely eliminating our lockup schedule. But I think to the detriment of, you know, our valuation, we started out at a very low multiple in comparison to some of where our peers were trading at. Right now, we're, you know, a little over six, and the industry average is around 12 from an EV to EBITDA multiple. So, you know, from just pure numbers, we are extremely, you know, discounted. But what happened is you saw a major pullback, right? There's not a lot of new money coming into this space. You know, we're literally stealing money, you know, from another company to invest in us, you know, so it's like you know, you see this money kind of circling around. So there hasn't been this big influx of capital that I think could kind of level out some of these valuations as we've gotten past the lockup and have been a publicly traded company for, you know, now almost 2 years. Wow, I can't even believe it's almost 2 years. But then outside of that, I would say from a credit rating perspective, we've been very selective on the debt that we've taken on. And again, let's go back to the MO of Verano. Take what you need, move on to the next facility, and continue to move on. So, you know, we took a $30 million loan. You know, we did 120. We upsized that, and we just did a $350 million refi. But all of this, and I want people to fully understand this, is like we have unencumbered real estate. We've never done a sale leaseback. So I think the conservative nature in which we built out our balance sheet and the way that we've managed different opportunities to raise capital, I think remains very attractive in credit lenders' eyes. So when you kind of layer in the conservative nature of Verano, the healthy multiples, which, you know, in Q3 were tops in the space at 36%, and you look at where the EV to EBITDA multiples trading at, you simple math on where we should be at.
Fantastic. Aaron Miles, Chief Investment Officer of Verano. We have to unfortunately move on to our next interview, but always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you again for taking the time to be with us.
Always appreciate it. Maybe live in Miami in the spring. Let's do it. So
definitely, you know. Definitely right. Live in Miami in the spring. Awesome. Yes, sir. We'll see you then. Be well.
Thanks for the time, guys.
Awesome. Always great to have Aaron on. Such a nice guy. There are a lot of nice people in cannabis, including you, Javi.
Indeed.
You're nice too. All right, so let's keep it moving.
I'm looking at the chat for the American one, just so you know. We don't light up here because we require a bunch of concentration to talk finance. We cannot be misleading investors.
Yeah,
I will light up after the show. So you're welcome to join me.
He does product reviews. Media. The American one. Check out some of Javi's product reviews on this show. Next time, not now.
I'm going to do a review on Paxos products. No, not now. But I'm going to do a review on Paxos products that I tried in California. And they were just, oh my God.
That was it. I love it. Javier Haas, for more product reviews, just tune into the next show. That being said, we are moving on to a leader in cannabis technology. Truly a leader. I'm not just blowing smoke. I mean, Jane Technologies is the real deal. Their CEO, Socrates Rosenfeld, and co-founder. Let's bring him on over here. And no pun intended. I said, I'm not going to blow smoke here. Yeah, no pun intended. Socrates, welcome in. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you guys? Pleasure to be on.
Oh, it's good, man. We're chilling. We're over here chilling, talking finance, having fun with it.
You guys feel like you're having fun. That's good.
We try, man. We try. So Socrates, first time Jane Technologies has been on the show. So just give us a quick run through of what you're doing over there.
Jane, we're a tech provider in the space. We have our core offering in e-commerce that we launched in April of 2017. So I've been at it for quite some time now and seen the evolution of the industry and really just feel honored to be a part of it and supporting our about 3,000 retailers and brands with their digital presence. We have since evolved into expanding our business lines into some media stuff, advertising. But for the most part, we run e-commerce and build e-commerce and empower a lot of the best businesses, brands, and retailers alike across the country.
Before Javi dives in, because I know he's got 30 questions, can you expand on media stuff? Us being a media, that just piques my ears, man.
Yeah, no podcasts there. But in terms of, I hesitate to even call it an advertisement. But what we're able to do is, because we do some differentiated things with cleansing live inventory data at a store, right? We can understand what's sitting at a store in Mundelein, Illinois, for instance, in real time. And we can do it in a way that with nearly 100% certainty, we understand that it's actually an individual SKU, this flavor, this strain, the serving size, et cetera. And so what we can do with that is shift products up and down and customize and curate a menu, very similar to how Spotify customizes and curates music for the listener.
Wow.
And with that curation, there's also opportunity to lend some sponsorship and promote some brands, very similar to a slotting or shelving fee that you see in the in-store environment, you know, top shelf, middle row, et cetera. We can do that in the digital world. And in the digital world, the rows aren't fixed and the rows are infinite. And so we can democratize and open up a lot more available advertising space in the digital world than one would have in the physical space. So it allows for big brands to participate as well as the smaller brands that would otherwise kind of be blocked out in the in-store environment. We open that opportunity up to them in the digital world. So we think it's really fair, and it drives a lot of conversion because it's ultimately very personalized for the consumer. And at the end of the day, we share in that revenue with the stores themselves. So we try to create these win-win business models where everybody can win. Brands get some really strong ROI and deep attribution. Customers get a very curated menu, and stores get to participate, not only driving in more conversion and more products added to cart, but we cut them in and we do a rev share model. So it's very innovative. Imagine if DoorDash would be cutting checks to your local restaurant down the street. And
they should be with the fees they charge. That's all I'm going to say.
Amen, Elliot. I'm with you.
Well, like Elliot said, I don't have 30 or 50 questions, but to paraphrase 50 Cent, I got 21 questions and they're all about weed. I'm going to do two back to back.
All right.
The first one is, how do you measure up? How do you compete with some of the other big players in this space? Think Dutchy. I know Weed Maps is doing a push toward e-commerce. I know Leafly made some kind of bet. Ease is doing e-commerce. So how do you compare to those, and what is your competitive advantage versus some of these relatively large players?
We kind of compete by not competing. And I know that's a little bit of a cop-out answer, but it's the truth. We really respect all the tech providers in the space. We know how hard it is. So we have nothing but respect and see what they're doing. And sometimes we draw inspiration from what they're doing. I think what Leafly had been doing for a very long time and providing content out to the industry for really trying to bring some education around the plant is amazing. I think giving what Weed Maps has been doing in terms of providing a digital footprint for stores that 10 years ago didn't have their own website, that was very powerful. So for us, we draw inspiration. I think what Dutchy's doing in terms of expanding their business outside of just e-commerce is really hard, and nothing but respect to their team. Ultimately, Javier, what we're trying to do is just doing what's right for the industry. I'm a big fan of the plant. I believe in the power of the plant. The 200 employees we have at our company are all kind of singing from the same hymn book in terms of being very mission focused. And I'm not saying that the technology space is the end all be all by any means, but it is certainly a driver and a shaper of what this industry will look like, not only for today, but 10 years from now. And so we like to draw inspiration, but we don't like to compete directly against, because ultimately when you do that, you can just get, you're going to end up on parity, right? That's a great example of that. Pepsi, Coke, that's not what we're trying to create. We're just really trying to create differentiated, new, innovative technology that fits into this space and hopefully inspires others as well. So for us, we're just focused on what we do best, and that's build really good tech and support and service our retail partners and brand partners as best as we can.
It does sound a little bit like a cop-out, but I can attest to your good intentions for real. Like, I remember I probably did the first feature on you when you first got into the cannabis industry, and I know all of your backstory and where all this passion comes from. And it's very real, and the motivation is real, and the objectives you have are very noble. And I don't want to get into that because this is not a show about singing your praises. I just, wanted to say a little bit, that's something nice, because it's true, right? And sometimes, a lot of people say nice words, but they don't always mean it. I'm looking at the website and you got trending products, right? And I always assume that trending products featured at the top of a website that sells stuff or products, from companies that paid for the positioning. I'm not going to ask if these are paid or non-paid.
It's not paid.
What are...
You don't have to ask. It's not paid. It's data-driven.
Perfect. That is even better. Because that's what I want to know. What are the top-selling categories then, right? Because I would not just go into a website and believe this is the trending stuff in general, right? Maybe now I've learned something about Chain too.
Yeah. Well, we don't lie. So, or mislead. So I appreciate you recognizing that what I've been saying for 5-6 years in terms of helping the industry at least rings true today. We'll see in 5-6 years from now if I change my tune. In terms of specifically to answer your question, what are trending in the industry you know, that is zip code to zip code. It's different, right? If I go ask what's trending in New Jersey versus what's trending in Washington, Colorado, you know, it's a beautiful thing because I'm a fan of hip hop, and hip hop in Atlanta has a very different flavor than hip hop in Bay Area than it does in Southern California. And that's a beautiful mm-hmm. thing. We love that, right? And we love cannabis, but cannabis in Florida is very different than cannabis in you know, San Francisco, for instance. So that's the beautiful part about Jane, is that what we can do is follow the live consumption of individual SKUs. You ask categories, I would direct you to like a headset or BDS that can tell you 40% is flower, 20% is edible, but that's very high level. What we can tell you, if you change your zip code around on Jane, you'll start seeing different products emerge and surface based on the zip code that you're in. Very similar to, you know, what's popular, what are popular foods to try in Pittsburgh versus, you know, Philadelphia. There's going to be two very different things. So
it's almost like a Google Maps technology where it's like products near me.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. And they will get more and more curated. Right now, Javier, we're not personalizing the entire experience, but we will. And we'll be able to say, hey, welcome, Javier. We know you love PAX pods, for instance, as you alluded to. Well, we can show you trending items in the concentrate section because we know you're a concentrate buyer. So it's less so a platform to allow for advertisement and more so to drive curation and personalization. And we'll find a way to monetize on that at some point. But really what we're trying to do is just earn the trust of our consumer base. So thanks for surfacing that, man, that it is data driven. It's not pay to play.
Yeah, and just so people know, PAX did not sponsor this show, although they should.
Not yet.
So Socrates, a couple more questions from me, man. You said 3,000 brands and retailers. What do you have any sense of what is that? That's a large number. Right. So what part of the market share do you guys control there? Can you tell us? Do you know?
Oh, man.
It's a tough question, I know, and it could change daily.
It does. It's interesting because we define store, like when we say we're in right now about 2,300 stores, we define a store as a single location, not a license.
Okay.
Right. So there's no double counting in Colorado, et cetera. So by that arithmetic, I would venture to say there's about probably 6,000 open retailers in North America. Some people I've heard 7,000. I've heard more than that. I'm not really too familiar with the Canadian market, even though that's probably a lot more transparent than what's going on in Oklahoma and Oregon, even like how many stores are available there. You know, it's less so about chasing market share and more so about chasing the right kinds of brands and retailers in the right markets. Mm-hmm. And we really, you know, we just had Verano on. They're a close partner of ours. We like partnering with I'm not saying big MSOs or enterprises, but Verano is an extremely sophisticated retailer that is growing, that is trying to do the right thing by the industry. That's who we like to partner with. They're in the right markets, you know, Florida, Illinois. I'm not telling anybody anything they don't already know. So that's really our focus. There are other markets that we love. You know, Oklahoma, Oregon, Canada, Alaska, you know, I'm from New England, so Maine, you know, we love those markets, but we can't be everywhere all at once all the time. And so our focus is really partnering with the right brands, the right retailers in terms of market share. I'll let the investors and you guys decide, you know, kind of what the denominator is. But right now we count about 3,000 brands and retailers on our platform.
Awesome. Awesome answer. And then one more question for me. I wanted to give you a chance to chat about, you were speaking about innovative technologies earlier and how that's where you put your focus. Talk to us about the first month of this iOS app, the success you've had, what you've seen from it, just your general experience from it over the last month.
Yeah, it's been a lot of people don't know this, but we initially launched Jane as an app back in 2017 and got swiftly denied by the App Store. So that was that's why we turned into a web application. So we learned the hard way. So it's kind of like a running joke internally that it took us 6 years to launch the app. But it's been a blast, man. Like what you guys are having fun on something that you've created, right? You enjoy it so much. It's in your spirit, and we did the same thing. And I think the biggest thing that we're seeing, we have, you know, tens of thousands of downloads already. We have very, very excited consumer base. I think some very positive reviews on the App Store. But ultimately, what we're trying to create in the app is, if I were to ask you right now, where are you guys based? In New York?
North Carolina and Argentina.
Okay, so not any semblance of legal cannabis. If you download the app and put yourself in LA, for instance, or Denver, or Chicago, or wherever there's legal cannabis, the difference between our app and maybe Javi, to come back to your question about maybe how we do things a little bit differently than the rest of the players in the space is, on other platforms, you can't do an item first search. Meaning, if I'm looking for what's your favorite product, your PAX Pod, Javi, do you have a strain that you love?
Yeah. No, I am more of a flower guy, but I just there was a diamond. There was a diamond pod that was very interesting. And, and infused flower. That one was the one. Infused flower, 42%.
Wow, my God, yeah, we could hang out, man. So let's say you're looking for that, right? And you're in LA, or let's say you're at MJ Biz in Las Vegas, and you're like, man, I'm looking for this PAX pod. Well, on other platforms, they've constructed and. It's a lot easier to do this, so I understand why they went and did this. But they built their platform a lot like you would order off a restaurant, right? And if you think about, you go and visit me in, let's say, Las Vegas. We go link up, and you're like, man, I'm ready to eat. I'm like, cool. Well, let's pull up DoorDash, and let's find the seller first, right? Let's find the restaurant first, and then decide on the menu item that we want. Right, because the menu item is curated. It's specific to that restaurant. It's not like I'm looking for spaghetti bolognese. I'm like, all right, who has the lowest price spaghetti bolognese? No, it's just like, hey, I like that restaurant. What food did they have? Let me go eat there. In CPG, it's flipped. Mm-hmm. Right, think about how you last ordered something off Amazon. Right, you typed in the item first, and then you compare that item against other available sellers. And whether that was the best reviewed, whether that was the lowest price, whether that was something that could deliver to you in the shortest amount of time, you had what's known as purchasing power. And we've been spoiled as a consumer in this digital age for the past 30 years. Thank you or not thank you, Jeff Bezos, for kind of creating this model where now as the consumer, I'm not the one in the blind. Mm-hmm. I have the power. I can decide where I want to put my dollars. In cannabis, 2 years before the Jane app even launched, you couldn't do that, right? You'd go on one of the listing services, you type in, but you would have to go and you couldn't find a PAX and then compare it on price or read reviews or get recommendations against that because they didn't do what's known as data cleansing. And that's what we've done. We have, you know, a lot of software patents on this capability, but now you can go on Jane, type in any product that you want. We'll not only show you where it's available, but we'll allow you to do some research and pull the levers that you need to pull to make the ultimately the right decision, whether that's by price or review, et cetera. And that's where we differentiate. And this is why, we've caught the attention of the consumer base as now we're creating a way to shop for their cannabis, like they shop for everything else and not have to go into every dispensary menu just to see if they have the product that they want.
Awesome.
So before you go, I have one little pearl that I think you'll appreciate. Please. Considering your name and that you love hip hop. Did you know Jay-Z was a fan of Plato? And I know that because I'm a fan of hip hop and of Socrates, right? And I am a fan of Socrates as well. And one time Jay-Z said that he was Plato to Biggie's Socrates. And there's several Jay-Z songs that mention Socrates. So something to research.
Okay.
I'll
take that into, thank you, man.
Yeah. Let us know what you think of those next time you're on, Socrates.
I will. Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us, my friend. Socrates Rosenfeld, CEO, co-founder of Jane Technologies. I heart Jane. We all heart Jane. Thank you again, man.
Thanks, guys. Be well.
You too. Awesome. Two amazing interviews. We're not done. Keep the energy going, y'all. Yeah. Very excited for the next one, too. Yeah, we had two good interviews. Javi, any thoughts before we get to our last? No, certainly
I
not.
Know what you thought of my hip hop Socrates and Jay-Z tidbit?
I thought it was okay. No. I thought it was an okay tidbit. I'm not going to lie to you. You're my friend. I tell my friends the truth. It was just okay. but Javi, you do have an abundance of knowledge.
Knowledge bombs. No,
I appreciate you, and I will say you have an abundance of knowledge bombs, and I appreciate that. so much from you. With that being said, I'm going to let you dwell on this and your mediocrity. No, I'm kidding. Let's go ahead, though. Bring CEO of Accelerate Manufacturing, Grant Schuster, over. There he is. Grant, welcome in, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're good.
Thanks for having me.
Is that just me, Javi? Do you hear a fan?
A little bit of static. There you go.
There we go. It's much fun. Better. Yeah, yes. Much better. Awesome. Right. Grant, tell us about you, man. What's going on over Accelerant?
Well, you know, coming after the show, it was interesting to hear everything you guys just talked about. And I really feel we're at the right place at the right time as a company. You know, for those who don't know what we do, similar to Xerox, I give away really, really big expensive automation, in particular for pre-rolls. And I want my customers to make as many copies as humanly possible. And that way there's more joints, so Javi could smoke some joints. And, you know, we charge per unit. So I feel like we're in a great place. I came out of the show at MJ Biz extremely excited for not only where we are, but frankly, I think where the industry is going. I don't see the doom and gloom that some others saw, but certainly I do see some of the challenges.
Awesome to hear, man. So you make equipment, pre-roll equipment. Is that the only? Do you focus on other types of manufacturing?
Yes. So our history is in automating really anything. It's bespoke automation. Awesome. So what we're really excited for is we see a tremendous amount of opportunity to do what we do in packaging or vape filling. You know, there's a lot of other areas of the industry, both horizontally, meaning other product lines, and vertically, right? Helping customers go from just making a product and they do their packaging to helping them scale their packaging. And, you know, we chose a part of the business that I found particularly difficult as an operator, and really our need to really help scale the business on products that, you know, we all really enjoy consuming.
I want to understand this model of production as a service, right? You don't sell your machines, or you do to those who want them?
I don't sell machines. And I'll tell you.
Okay. Can you explain? Yeah.
Perfect. I absolutely can. You know, think of it like software as a service, right? They go and they go to Amazon and they host their entire software platforms, right? Jane probably does it with Amazoners, or, you know, that's what everybody does, at least when they're getting started. And we're similar. We're the server rack, if you will, to producing product. And the reason we love it is it's a really aligned interest. We make changes all the time. Software changes, hardware changes. And, you know, why should my customers have to pay out $20,000 for an upgrade, $30,000 for an upgrade, right? I build it into my cost structure that I know I'm going to be able to make enough to deliver these, and I'm completely aligned. I'm making a change to make your product better, faster, and cheaper, right? That way, you know, you can make more product for more people at costs that you understand. And finally, the other reason why, frankly, is Aaron at Verana mentioned, right? If you're going to automate everything in every state, it's very expensive. Automation for companies like Mars can reach $10, $20, $30 million. Well, if you're doing that in 15 states, you need a lot of cash. So what we're able to do is come in and essentially partner with all these companies to help them have the same quality in every single state. And that's what's really impactful for us, is being aligned with them.
I got a couple quick follow-ups to better understand how this works. One is, are you in every state? Do you have a machine in every state, or are there certain states where you're available and others that you're not? And the other one is, how does this make economic sense for a company, right? Because you basically have to ship the flour and then ship the, or drive, right? But like transport the pre-rolled back to a facility and then distribute to a dispensary or retailer. So
I'll answer your first question first, because it's easier. We just installed in our seventh state, and we put our equipment in our operators, in our partners. So they don't have to transport back and forth. It literally is like Xerox, right? You know, if you're like, hey, I need a lot of copies of something, I'm going to call the Xerox provider. They're going to bring you a machine. You're going to make copies, and you have to supply your own paper, your own ink. It's exactly the same. Our customers supply their own paper cones. They supply their own cannabis. And what we're able to do is help them decouple the capacity that they thought they had with manual labor and really increase their product production.
Do you have another follow-up, Javi?
Yeah, last one. Are you in the paper cone business?
I'm not in the cone business, at least not today. You know, there's a lot of great providers out there, and we work with everybody. I want to make sure that your product is great first. And if you're a operator, take Verano or any of the companies out there, and they have a relationship with a paper cone vendor that they found very reliable, and they have that relationship. I'm going to do my best to make sure that that relationship can continue. Making cones is a whole nother business. I'm not saying we'll never do it, but right now there's enough operators in the space. But there are a lot that aren't reliable. And that's when we really try to move customers to known partners that provide really high quality papers, because we can fix a lot of cone issues on our machine, but there are, you know, if you get a bad cone, you get a bad cone, right? There's not an unlimited amount of fixing that I can do of supply problems. So mm-hmm. It's a lot, but not unlimited.
When you undergo changes to the hardware, to these machines, what kind of changes? Are they generally small? Have you ever had a new machine entirely? I'm curious, when it comes to the growth of your business, what those changes look like.
Absolutely. So we grow with you. So our longest standing customer is in Maryland, SudMed. You guys probably had them on. They're probably the biggest canopy in Maryland. And they started on an old platform. That is a completely new machine, new engineering from the ground up. And I swapped it out for them because, you know, aside from Maryland becoming recreational, right, they were starting to push up against the capacity of that machine. Part of this is, you know, everybody wants to go from 0 to 100, but sometimes you need to go to 0 to 50 first. And sometimes it's state regulation driven, right? A big, fast automated machine doesn't work in states that have 10-pound batch limits because your changeover time is too frequent, right? So for us, we'll give you two smaller machines, right, instead of one big machine. If the regulations change, I'll swap out. So that I would say is something that we hope every customer gets to, right, needs new, bigger machines. And we swap them out, and we manage our obsolescence around parts and similar pieces. But we made a change today to a customer. It's why I'm out here in California, where we had a tamp rod that is, you know, this big, and we changed it out. It's just a really small piece. So sometimes it's that, and sometimes it's software. We collect a crazy amount of data. And for us, it helps us make our machines run better, helps us give reports back to managers. It helps us do a lot of work with our customers. Sometimes it's getting one more piece of data from our customer so that we can give it back to them.
Awesome. Going into next year, I mean, what are you preparing for? In 2023, what are you looking at? What changes are you excited to make?
You kind of read my mind. I just got a ladybug. Can you see it? I was going to ask him to.
It's good luck for me, right?
For it is. The luck passes to our guests here, Grant.
there's a lot. One is we are looking at new technologies. So whether it's injection with joints and creating sort of the infused joints, we've done a lot of work over the last 6 to 7 months over how to make infused joints really, really well. And that is definitely a challenge. And not everybody's infusion works. A lot of range, right? And that's really what the scope of our project was. New infusion technologies that aren't even on the market today that I can put on the same business model. And from the show, we had a tremendous number of requests for packaging. So those are sort of some of the basics of what I'm really excited for. And then the other thing that is coming out of the show is we see machines and how much excess capacity they have. And if you're a manufacturer, you want to fill capacity on your machines so long as there's market demand. So we've actually gone ahead and created what I call an asset-backed license company. So we actually have our own brands that we will go and work with other partners of ours who have our equipment. So we know exactly what the quality is. We know exactly how we can help them, how much capacity they have. And it helps them get to cheaper and cheaper units as they produce more, because the more you produce on our equipment, the less expensive it costs, right? So I'm really aligned. I really want you to make more, right? And this is one way where we can help you fill the wagon with more products. Not everybody has to take that deal, but it's available on the table for our partners who really want it. And I've made a lot of licensed brands before on the asset light model, and where I felt they could have really helped us is, you know, how do we automate your product? How do we scale your product? Really, the more successful they became, the harder it was for me to make it. And I thought that was an inverse relationship. So it's something that we've started pursuing and actually unveiled at the trade show, some new technology and some new brands that we're launching.
Last one for me, I've been looking at your numbers, right? And you say, you know, up to 3,000 pre-rolls an hour. There's two different offers, right? One is for 200 and, you know, about 200,000 pre-rolls a month. The other is for 500K. The pricing is different. Does it make sense for smaller operators who don't necessarily need 3,000 pre-rolls per hour or 200,000 a month?
Yes. Yeah, so we have a smaller machine. It's about half of that. One of the things I say is, and we've had some new companies that it wasn't a fit for. And I'm going to be honest. I want you to be successful. I don't want you to get into a relationship with me and 3 months later, you're still not making anything. It's really hard. Like, you know, there are other options that, you know, to get started. But I want to keep that line of communication open. When you're a small operator, so long as there's not really, really small batch sizes, right? Like if your batch size is 500 grams, no automation is good for you. Go with a knockbox. That's the way to go. You know, that's the truth. And the first thing I want anyone in this industry to be is successful, right? Whatever they define mm-hmm. success as, like, I want to be there to help and support them, which often results in a lot of free consulting hours, but we're okay with that. And so at about 4 FTE, the cost is the same on an operational basis. So if your plan says I'm going to make 40,000 joints a month and I need 7 full-time equivalents, you know, it makes sense to use our business model from an operational perspective if you believe that you can then sell more product, right? And your capacity then is not 40,000. Your capacity is, say, 220,000 or 250,000, right? Whatever machine you have there. You're now saying, okay, I'm going to spend the same amount on an operational expense basis, right? Instead of labor, I'm going to have mechanical labor or automation, right? And I'm going to use that extra capacity to sell. I'm going to, you know, use that other labor to work on another product line that isn't automated today. So I think that that's more of the art of how our deals get done as opposed to the hard science. But I think it works for, I would call it mid-small operators, really small operators or artisans. You know, it's not a fit for it. And I think that there's a market for all those products.
You share the space, man. I got to tell you, Grant, you're here for the industry. And it's nice to hear that, man. Anything else that you'd like us to be aware about, Accelerant, that we should be excited about, man? I mean, as we look ahead.
You know, for us is really helping two things is helping our partners, right? Take Verano, right? You mentioned before, or he mentioned before, trying to avoid CapEx, but they want to get as many products out to customers as they can. Well, I feel like what a great partnership there, right? Mm-hmm. I can help them manufacture way more product without impacting their CapEx. They're not going to take out any additional debt. They really look to us as a partner to help get their business up and running in areas where they may need help. And I'm not saying they do because I like Swift Lifts. I think they do a great job. But then every place you go get a Swift Lift, every single state is made on exactly the same equipment. They could see exactly the same settings and bring exactly the same quality. And we've tested our quality. And I think that's really where I focus first quality and then speed and production. I can always give you more equipment, right? I want you to make a great joint. The second is I'm really excited for the products that we have under our own sort of control, if you will, right? The formulas. I think there's a lot of really interesting technology from outside cannabis to come in that I think cannabis finally has the scale for. Things like turning oils into powders with no carriers. That's a really unique product form that nobody else has today. I think there's a lot of things like that. And I'm really, really bullish on being a great service provider to the industry. I've been in it for a long time. I've seen some of the not so good things. I've seen some of the good things. And hopefully we can fall into that latter category. But I'm really excited to work with these companies and really help them hit their, you know, 22, 23 budgets. So hopefully they, you know, can go public, or if they're already public, that they have a great return for their investors and for their customers. So that's what I'm excited for. You know, and I hope, I think everybody on our team is equally excited for that and our new products in 23.
And as they grow, you grow, my friend, a super cool manufacturing SaaS-ish type platform. I'm obsessed, man. That's awesome. Thank you for coming on, man. Really appreciate your insights. Super unique company. Thank you again. Grant Schuster, thank CEO you. Of Accelerant Manufacturing, man. Awesome. AT, that was the most abrupt cutoff ever. But Grant, we appreciate you coming on. Javi, what do you think?
Sorry, man? Grant.
I'm not going to lie. I don't think I fully knew what Grant did. And I think it's really cool. I think it makes it accessible to companies to play on the same level as higher companies. Yeah. And I think that part of it is super unique and super cool.
I mean, people will definitely freak out a little bit when they do the math on how much, you know, making pre-rolls as a service costs. But then you discount the fact that a machine like that would cost $500,000, $1 million, even more. And it starts to make sense, especially if you're getting started and you know, at scale,
yeah,
with this, right? And as you scale up, I think also it's like leasing, right? It's one of those things where it's like if you want to continue to have the best and the newest, I like the option very much.
Mm-hmm. Me too. This is awesome. Javier Haas, we had three amazing interviews today, man. I think our brain power is just about spat. I will say thank you to everybody who stuck with us. But honestly, three incredible executives, from Aaron Miles to Socrates Rosenfeld to Grant Schuster. Really appreciate all three joining us. Come back Thursday, 4 Eastern time. Javier, give us a quick runoff, man. What do they need to know as we wrap up the hour?
Benzinga.com/cannabis for your daily dose of cannabis news. Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference is returning to Miami for its, 16th edition, 17th edition? I've lost count. The point is, this is an amazing conference. It's the best, the most successful financial and business conference in the cannabis space. April 11th and 12th at the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami. BZ Cannabis, or BZ Cannabis if you're in Australia.
No, we don't do that
BZ
here.
Cannabis. BZCannabis.com for more information. And again, just once again, remember, Benzinga.com/cannabis, bookmark it, go check it out every day. We're improving the site every day. We're working on it. We're taking feedback. Email me, javierhase@benzinga.com. If you have any feedback, any pitches, any ideas, we are here 24/7.
Boom. If you want to be a part of the event, elliotlane@benzinga.com. With that said, we're done. We're back Thursday at 4 Eastern time. Be there, be square, or anything but a cool joint like Javier Hase of 42% THC. But until Thursday, my friend.
Not frequently.
Not frequently. Yeah, right. He's about to go light one up. All right, y'all. Peace out. We're done. Bye.